things we're dealing with are threats to humanity unlike anything the world has ever seen before.
We can bequeath our children a greener planet and a more prosperous future.
That's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger.
If unprecedented changes are not made, and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero Carbon.
East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista Series 5, Just Stop the Tories. I'm Ian Collins, and this is the UK's number one environment-based podcast. If it's green, it's in. And Dale, we start with a brand new feature. It's called F*** of the Year. And here's the winner.
I think I can guess.
Let's see. I'll crack the envelope open. And the winner is the president of COP28, Sultan Al-Jaber. There you go.
Al-Jaber Jaber, actually, as I like to call
him. What the hell was going on? Explain the story for those who are unfamiliar with the verbal terrain of the great Sultan.
So, look, he's the chairman of the massive oil and gas company that is owned by the state of the United Arab Emirates, hosts of COP28. He got the gig from the UN, who said, don't worry that he's the boss of a massive oil company and is totally vested in this stuff, right? I think they must have been thinking that they were like, that qualifies him, like some kind of, gamekeeper becomes poacher kind of thing. Or maybe even vice versa, right? The poacher becomes gamekeeper, they thought, and he'd run a decent COP. But he showed his true colors, I think it was yesterday, it might have been the day before, when he got exasperated in an interview and declared that there was no science that supports the transition away from fossil fuels, basically, unless we all want to go and live in caves again.
So let's just clarify. So the president of COP, the man who's kind of looking after it, heading it up, a pivotal and very important globally environmental conference where all the good and the great talk about the irredeemable science and the problems facing the planet and how not to die, and the list goes on, says, there's no such thing as climate change, Gov.
There's no science to support the transition. That's what he said. No science. And he brought out that right-wing trope, right? I mean, our friend Mike Graham, Julie Hartley Brewer, Piers Morgan, they all use it. They all say, oh, you want us all to live in caves. You know what I mean? Which is just, it's a terrible thing to say. And what they're trying to, it's a slur, right? That, you know, environmentalist, net zero, green living, all this kind of stuff is about going backwards in terms of standard of living, which it is not. But it's a bit of an extreme example. Al-Jaber Jaber, the chairman of the COP28 has just said the same thing.
That's just, I mean, I read this, you know, when people say I had to read it twice, I read this four times because I thought, no, it must be a typo here. He's obviously not the president of COP28. He's president of something, and he happened to go to COP28, and they've conflated his presidential status with, and no, this is the fella running the show.
Yep, he's running the show into the ground.
Please, here's what he said. Please help me. Show me the roadmap for a phase out of fossil fuel that will allow for sustainable socio-economic development, unless you want to take the world back to caves.
And before that, he said there was no science to support it.
Indeed. The response from somebody in the front row was, f*** off. There you go.
I didn't know you were there.
But this is not, look, at the previous COP, the one that you went to in Glasgow.
Two COPs ago now.
Yeah. Two COPs ago. There were people taking part in the debate from the oil companies. Now, I kind of half get that, all right, because you kind of want them to debate it, even if they're going to talk shizzle. But the fact that they're for a debate is fine.
Yep.
They're absolutely the people you want to debate with. But the idea that the president of the whole thing holds this view, this could be the last COP, surely.
Do you know what? I don't think it will be. There are still, I know, something like 100 countries of the world calling for the outcome of this COP to include a date for the ending of the use of fossil fuels. So, I mean, despite what he said, he's not a lone voice, but he's not the dominant voice in the direction of travel of the climate talks. So this is shocking, but probably not the end of the world. Not yet.
Well, I mean, just to feed into the point that I was just making, you know, there's nothing wrong with inviting some people from those industries that are troubling to debate it and maybe educate and all the rest of it. what we didn't expect was 2,456 fossil fuel lobbyists would be granted access to COP. I mean, that's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think so, but I don't know what it's been like in previous COPs, you know?
Well, it's four times the amount was at COP27.
Okay, well, then, yes. I mean, big deal, right? It's in the Middle East, so you've got to think there's a lot of fossil fuel lobbyists kind of hang out
there.
That's true. So maybe it's just on the doorstep or something.
But they don't live next door to the conference centre. Maybe they all live in the conference centre. I don't know. Maybe the conference centre is like a harem, I don't know, for fossil fuel nuts who all kind of converge and live there most of the time. That's a cave, perhaps.
That's the new feature, fossil fuel nuts. That's what we should have.
Yeah, you see, that's a whole new feature. We need a new sound effect for that. But I find it interesting. Again, look, if you're a lobbyist, do strange things. But if you were the organizers behind issuing passes to come to COP28, you'd get surely, so you're going through, you've got all your paperwork there and you're going through it. You know, Pam, pass me another ream. I'm just going through this next batch. When you got to about, I don't know, 1,000 fossil fuel lobbyists, wouldn't you go, something not right about this?
Well, look, but
it's quite a lot of fossil fuel people coming to this.
It's in the Middle East and it's chaired by the boss of a massive oil and gas company. I mean, that's a big invitation, right, to the fossil fuel lobbying industry to come along and see if they can't do some harm to the, you know, the whole idea of giving up fossil fuels.
Yeah. Here's a question from Billy. He says, why haven't the Tories woken up and smelt the flowers yet that they are killing the earth? I mean, look, even if you're a Tory, I don't know whether the Tories are single-handedly doing this. There's not enough of them, are there?
No, but they've been in power a long time now, 13 years and counting. I mean, I like the way it's phrased, right? Wake up and smell the flowers. But actually, you have to wake up and smell the lack of flowers here because that's the problem, right? We've lost 96% of our wildflower meadows in the last 50 years. And that's about farming, intensive animal farming, especially and in particular, which is, you know, one of the most stupid things to do. And David Attenborough came out today, by the way, or I saw it today, and actually said the most strident thing he's ever said about the role of diet in the incredible decline of wildlife planet-wide and how we actually need to think about our diets and eat more plants and less animals. Quite incredible, because he's a very respected voice, you know, more than I am. But he's saying exactly the same things, that 3/4 of the world's land could be given back to nature if we stop eating animals.
It's interesting. We had a question from Chloe that ties into this, who says we need to reduce our dependence on animal agriculture to cut emissions and protect biodiversity. But there's such public resistance to suggestions of cutting down on meat and dairy consumption. How can this be achieved? It's a good question, is it? What is the right route? Because I think notionally, most people there will probably go, yeah, I kind of agree with that, but I just think I'll have a bacon sandwich.
Well, maybe we think that, and you know, that's the kind of thing that we see in the media, and we might see it on social media. What you've got to wonder is, does it actually represent what most people are thinking? It's not like a proper survey or something like that, is it? And I think we've got one of those actually in the lineup for today. But I minded also, just to bung in, that in the last 20 years there's been a 30% drop in the consumption of red meat in our country. So whatever people are saying about how they want the right to meat, and I think it's about that more than anything else, not being told what to do. We are changing our diets, and we're doing it because we're accessing more information about the harmful effect on wildlife, on the planet, and our own human health.
And that ties in. There's a lot of stuff tying in here, Dale. It's like almost we produced this somehow.
That's a bit of luck, really, wouldn't it?
That ties in with this survey, which was not insignificant. It's about 7,500 people. Mm. More than half of Europeans are cutting down on meat.
Yeah, and in 10 European countries, this survey, and that's what I call a proper survey, right? Rather than the kind of, you know, whatever our own personal experience of reading media and social media is and makes us feel, oh, there's a lot of backlash, blah, blah, blah. Proper survey, over half of people in Europe are cutting down eating meat. I mean, what can you say, right?
Yeah, primary motivations for reducing meat consumption are health reasons, which is 47%, but that's fine. Environmental concerns, nearly 30%. Animal welfare, over 25%. So, I mean, collectively, they are all good reasons, right, to stop.
They're the big three, right? It's killing us, it's killing the planet, and yeah, pretty obviously it's killing animals, but not in a nice way.
46% of Europeans said they have more trust in plant-based meat alternatives than they did 2 years ago. And that, I think, is quite an interesting headline out of this.
Me, I had big questions over that. I was coming back out of London yesterday, did a bit of Googling, because I had some concerns about what's in a Greg's vegan sausage roll and what's in a Burger King, you know, plant burger, whatever they call it, plant whopper. I don't really know. The amount of saturated fat in these products I mean, it's on a par with meat, actually. And so there's no great health benefit there. And the amount of salt as well. One Greggs vegan sausage roll is 1/3 of all the salt that you need to eat in one day.
Blimey.
I've been eating them two at a time. I'm gonna have to give them up.
Is that why they've widened the doors over there at Ecotricity HQ? I heard about it.
And it's a serious worry because this stuff that is plant-based alternative to meat in sausage rolls and burgers and stuff, it is not as healthy as people think that
we
it is.
Were, I think this is one of the first programs that highlighted this a couple of years ago when we made the point, yes, you want people to go vegan or vegetarian, then vegan ultimately. However, that in itself does not mean that everything you eat that's vegan is good for you. You've got to still look at what's in it.
Yeah, and especially with the rise of something called the dirty vegan version, you know, alongside the mainstream Greggs and Burger Kings, you know, the really, really dirty food, burgers just, you know, dripping with mayonnaise and fried onions and bacon slices, do you know what I mean? That kind of stuff, which is saturated fat overload.
I quite fancy one of those sausage rolls now that you've been eating two at a time. Yeah.
You need a forest green version of the sausage roll because that ain't got that stuff in it.
Yeah, well, good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's the headline or the concluding headline of this piece is that all the stuff we're talking about is out there. It's not as if it doesn't exist. You've just got to look for the good stuff.
Yeah.
But don't always assume that because it says vegan, therefore it's going to sort your waistline out because it might do the very opposite.
Exactly.
Elaine says, Dale, what are the benefits of a just transition from traditional steelmaking to electric arc furnaces? Traditional steelmaking, of course, usually uses coal, right?
Yeah, that's right. A particular kind of coal. I think they call it coke.
Coking coal,
yeah,
that's right.
Coking coal. And this is the coal mine in Cumbria was given permission on this basis by this government that it was needed by the British steel industry, actually, who all lined up quickly to say, well, actually, we don't want it. There's plenty of this kind of stuff in the market. And by the way, we want to move to green steel. And then 6 months later, they did exactly that, announced a move to green steel, funded by the same government that had just given permission to open a coal mine for coking coal, which is a bit ludicrous. But, you know, the big savings are in emissions because, of course, electricity we can make with renewable energy. So we can have zero carbon steel, you know, give or take, more or less.
Yeah. So it can happen. But again, this is all about wills and desires. Yeah.
And this is, again, one of those things, you know, you find yourself like I do on right-wing TV and radio, and they say, but what about steel? You know, how can we make that without fossil fuels? And they don't understand that actually it's happening already. It's happening in the world. All of the things that we need to do, the technology exists and the transformation is happening.
Here's another poll. I love a poll. This one isn't quite so attractive in some respects, Dale. Almost 3/4 of Londoners have said the cost of living crisis is making it difficult to buy greener heating or energy options for the home. This was a poll commissioned by London councils revealed that residents in the capital want to help prevent climate change, but say it's too expensive, essentially.
Yeah. Well, look, I would file this in that section we have that says, tell us something that we don't know.
Yeah.
Because we know the cost of living crisis is making living too expensive for some people, let alone transitioning to, you know, green alternatives and stuff. I mean, there are many examples where the green alternative does not cost you more and does cost you less. But there are some where, you know, if you want to upgrade your house insulation, for example, you've got to invest in it. If you want to buy solar panels, you've got to invest in those and you get your money back later. And right now in a cost of living crisis, of course, that looks too expensive to do and is too expensive to do. I get it.
Indeed. Paris climate targets, remember those. The UK apparently is likely to miss the targets by a pretty wide margin. This is not good news for this country.
Yeah, and this comes despite protestations from Rishi Sunak a few weeks ago when he rode back on green commitments. You'll remember he saved us from 7 recycling bins, car sharing and a meat tax, as well as pushing back the date for the phase out of fossil cars. At that time, he said he was still committed to 2050 and we had plenty of wiggle room because we were ahead of our own targets. Climate Change Committee called bullshit on that and said, no, we're not. And actually, we're going to miss by 10 percentage points this very important target, which is kind of like the minimum we have to do to stay on track almost for the 1.5 degrees and all that kind of stuff. Rishi Sunak tells lies. It's as simple as that. He knows the truth.
He's so cynical, Dale. What happened to you, Dale?
Well, But, you know, I was talking to the FT about this today, and I realized, you know, that they talk about what Rishi Sunak did with the car ban, pushing it back, you know, like 5 years and stuff. And it's all for show. It has no effect at all. And the other thing they talked about, drilling in the North Sea and Roseback, how he's talking about, you know, we need fossil fuels here and blah, blah, blah. And I said to him, where's the fossil fuels going to go? Are they going to land here? They're all going to land abroad. So none of that makes any sense. He says so many things that are just for show. I mean, this is where it's coming from.
Here's a question from Shirley, who says, how much green crap did David Cameron get rid of? And where would we be now if Labour's green policies had remained in place?
Well, I think he got rid of that little windmill on his roof, and that made all difference, actually, because it never worked, right? And I don't think he cycles anywhere anymore because, you know, that was a stunt, right?
True.
But the serious answer is he banned onshore wind through the planning process, and he effectively banned solar by taking away any form of financial support for it. It still struggles in planning, but it came back because the cost of solar panels have fallen so fast. So we're building solar. We have been for a couple of years now with no government money or public support at all. We could do the same with onshore wind, but it's still banned. And somebody put the cost of that in the intervening years since Cameron was the boss at several billion pounds added to our energy bills, the loss of development of onshore wind and solar.
Massive Attack and Ecotricity are back in bed together.
Well, I don't know what to say about that.
Not literally.
There's going to be a gig, right? And we were going to do, they were going to play a gig in Liverpool, and we were going to be a part of that with power and food. And you know, we helped scope out this 1.5 degrees concept that they've worked up with the uni up north somewhere, which is a brilliant kind of blueprint for events, live music events, to really sort their act out, you know, and become more sustainable. So yesterday they announced they're going to play in Bristol on the Downs, and there's no grid up there. Perhaps not everybody knows that. And so the particular challenge there is how to run it on renewable energy with no grid. Most events outdoors run on diesel and that kind of stuff. We've got some batteries coming that we're going to use all summer long next year at gigs and events and stuff like that. So we're going to make the whole thing powered by renewable energy, no diesel and no grid. And we're going to take some solar displays there as well, I think. Not displays, but examples. Get some solar trackers and that kind of stuff. We're just working out the details now. But we're hoping to have some solar trackers in and amongst the event and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there it is.
Bristol Downs. This will be probably next August, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's it.
So summertime, it'll be nice. Clifton Downs.
Yeah, and they're prioritizing local people, which is nice, because transport is like 70 to 80% of the carbon footprint of a live music event or a festival.
Of course, yeah.
And so they're prioritizing local people, saying, you know, if you've got a local postcode, you get in the queue ahead of everybody else. They're going to put on electric buses and stuff like that. If Forest Green have one by then, we'll throw that into the mix and get that used.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are serious about what they do. It's a great thing. It's, you know, it kind of lays down the gauntlet to all the other bands in the world, which some of which talk a good game. And that kind of stuff. I think the point they made is, you know, a lot of bands say, oh, we need the technology, but the technology is here, and we're going to show that next summer. Yeah.
And if you are a huge Massive Attack fan and you don't live in Bristol, stop moaning. Just move to Bristol. You see, that's the answer, isn't it?
A huge Massive Attack fan. a massive, massive Attack fan.
A massive, massive Attack fan. Here's a question from Priya, who says, what are some of the environmentally friendly gift ideas for Christmas? I know how much you love Christmas, Dale. You're almost dressed as Santa on a daily basis between now and the 25th. So when you delve your hand into your big sack of joy, what do you pull out? Sorry.
That's fine. That's fine. But anything that is environment friendly will make a more environmentally friendly gift than something that's not. I want to say the ideal gift to give for Christmas is not to give one, right? Save the wrapping paper, save the production of it, save the transport of it, probably from China, and just, you know, give a bit of love instead, a bit of time to somebody. But, you know, that's all I got.
What happened to you, Dale? Yeah, I thought you were going to say at least beer and crisps.
Chips.
Vegan mayo.
I'd skip the mayo. Too much saturated fat.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Back to where we started almost.
Indeed.
And that's it, Dale, for this week. But we will speak in 7 days.
Nice.
Don't forget, of course, you can follow Dale on social media, facebook.com/Dale Vince, twitter.com/Dale Vince, and on TikTok too.
Zero carbon. East off.